For the rest of the hour, publication and interaction of a different sort in the world of scientific publishing. One of the ways scientists measure success, as you know, is publications. Publish or perish, you've heard of that. But it's not just how many publications you churn out. And in what journals, the actual measure of success of a paper is if other scientists find it interesting and useful, and they search for it and find it and use it. Useful enough to base further work upon it. So every paper cites work that it's based on or expanded on or it needs. And joining me now is David Pendlebury. He's a citation analyst with the scientific business of Thomson Reuters. The company keeps track of who's citing whom and how often. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Ira.
Let's start by explaining what a citation is.
Well, that can be confusing. Some people refer to it as an entry on their curriculum vitae, but we use it to mean one of those footnotes or references that appears at the bottom of their research papers. And as you just mentioned, that is acknowledgement of an intellectual debt to someone else, sometimes to themselves, right, of a previous paper.
And if we look at citations now at the end of this year, and we look back and see which papers and subjects were cited the most, let's talk about what you have found.
Well, I did look at papers published in 2008 and which ones were most cited. I went field by field because different fields have different average rates of citation. Neurosciences, molecular biology, and genetics have very high average rates of citations, but mathematics and pharmacology have lower rates of citation. So you have to do it on a field-by-field basis. Okay. Then you also have to consider that papers that were published earlier in the year have had more time to be cited than those published later in the year.
Right.
So adjusting to certain things, I did look through some main fields, biology, medicine, physics, and chemistry, and I tried to pick up on highly cited papers published in 2008. Now, the main or the key discoveries may not have been made in 2008. They may have been made in the previous few years, but the indication of the high citations is a signal.
And what did you find? Biology, for example.
Well, this field called cellular autophagy, for those of us who forgot our Greek or Latin, means self-digestion. It's also called autophagocytosis. And this is a reaction at the cellular level that actually takes the trash out when things degrade. It was formerly thought that this especially happens when organisms are under great stress and there is decay. But in 2006, some Japanese researchers found that this is a normal process that is actually essential to development and homeostasis or general health. So this has really ignited a great interest in this field. There was some recent work in yeast, but it has moved into eukaryotic cells. Mm. And now there's even a journal called Autophagy that is in its fourth volume. So that's another marker of a field that is expanding and is important as a specialty when a journal is founded on that field. But I looked at the field in general. Back a few years, there were about 200 papers published in this field in 2004. 300 in 2005, 500 in 2006, 700 in 2007, and almost 1,000 in 2008. So it's an exponential growth.
What about medicine? What did you find there?
In medicine, I chose induced pluripotent stem cells as the high-cited field, and there were certainly a number of papers that were from late 2007 and early 2008. After I sent you my list by email yesterday, I noticed that Science Magazine named this area the breakthrough area of 2008. And I thought that that was quite interesting that we both came to the same conclusion, but by different methods. Hmm. They surveyed their journalists who cover science day in and day out. They talked to their editorial boards and other people. So that was a form of peer review where the experts are giving their judgments.
Yeah. And then just to clarify, this is a field that it shows ways to generate stem cells with characteristics similar to embryonic stem cells, but without the ethical issues that are involved.
That's correct. They're generated from what is known as somatic or adult cells.
Right. Let's move on to physics. What have you got in physics?
Well, you could call this physics or you could call it chemistry, but it's graphene. Graphene is carbon molecules in a sort of honeycomb pattern that is one atom thick. It's the thinnest material known. The key papers were from a group at the University of Manchester in 2004 and 2005, but this field has really, again, exploded in terms of the number of papers published and the number of citations to those papers.
This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News, talking about citations with David Pendlebury. So that would indicate this is a hot field of research.
Very hot.
One molecular layer thick sheets of graphite.
Correct.
Would that be nanoparticles, things like that? Or?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. I mean, if you imagine a sheet of graphene rolled into a tube, that's a nanotube.
So it's like chicken wire rolled up.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Just yesterday, IBM announced the fastest transistor yet made out of graphene materials.
Wow. So we'll even see more citations.
Absolutely.
Next year. Let's move on to chemistry.
Well, again, you might call this chemistry and you might call it physics, but there were papers published in 2008. This is a true 2008 discovery. They're iron-based superconductors, and this is very unusual because for the last 20 years or so, people have been exploring superconductors with copper materials, cuprate superconductors. So this gives researchers an entirely new family of superconducting compounds, and there's just great interest in the different properties of these particular new superconductors.
Any way to predict what's going to be hot paper next year?
Well, that's hard. We do some prediction in terms of who might win the Nobel Prize in the following years, but that's based on our view of what has been done in research and what has been cited.
How accurate have you been on that?
Been fairly accurate recently. Fortunately, of the four prizes that we survey in the science fields, we don't do literature and we don't do peace, we got at least one person in three of the four prizes last year.
Wow. So can you tell us what would be hot next year? Or you think it's going to be hot next?
I wish I could.
Is there a modern classic of, if you look back 10 years, you'd find the most citations?
Yeah. It's interesting to note that most papers are cited moderately or very little. This is the 80-20 rule, where in the population, 20% of the population gets 80% of the citations. So papers that are cited 500, 1,000, 3,000 times are extremely rare, exotic papers. One that really stands out is the work on RNA interference by Mello and Fier, and they, in fact, received the Nobel Prize in 2006 for their work. So there's a strong correlation between citations in the literature and the authors of those papers, the highly cited papers, and who may win a Nobel Prize.
So you can do your own little office pool.
We can. I haven't started one yet. Maybe I should.
You get all those 10-year papers together and, you know, you make the grid.
Yeah.
And figure out who's going to get next year's Nobel Prizes about this time.
Like the NCAA, right.
Exactly. And you get to choose that little box.
Yep.
And why leave it to sports? Why not have fun with science, too?
Well, in fact, the bookies Ladbrokes in England takes bets on the Nobel Prize, but only in literature and peace so far. They haven't moved into science yet.
We have to get into that popular culture.
If they do, I'll be there.
but people take this very seriously, though, too, don't they? Well, the citations.
Yes, absolutely, because citing in the sociology of science is really a very serious practice. It is actually malpractice if you do not cite relevant work regarding the paper that you're publishing. And it's the job of reviewers of scientific papers and editors to make sure that you have indeed cited the relevant literature before. It is science moves like law moves, based on precedent, and it's very important to acknowledge that precedent and to pay your intellectual debts.
There you have it. Could not have summed it up any better, David. Thank you very much for taking time to be with us today.
And thank you so much.
Happy holiday to you.
You too.
David Pendlebury is a citation analyst with the scientific business of Thomson Reuters, a very big publishing company. That's about all the time we have for today. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarian Kim Molesky. If you have comments or questions, you can write to us the classic old mailway. We'd like to get those letters. Science Friday, 4 West 43rd Street, room 306, New York, New York, 10036. Or you can email us or surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Flora Lichtman has her sci-fi pick of the week up there. It's what happens if you take if you take eggnog and you want to make sure that it's, what if you spike it a little bit, will it kill any bad bugs in it? We went to the laboratory, did an experiment with it. You can see it on sciencefriday.com, our eggnog laboratory experiment on our pick of the week. Have a great holiday weekend, a Merry Christmas, happy holidays to you. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.